N.T. Wright, Anglican bishop, English scholar, history, literature, ancient literature. N.T. Wright, pretty good guy. He's written a book, and in this book, he describes something that, as we were playing earlier, just came to my mind, and it applies to this scripture that's in front of us, is that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, each one wrote their gospel from their perspective. We just read that John was the one who was leaning back on Jesus. I got to say, in probably any age or any culture, that is a little bit much for most men. So John, being the youngest, but also the most passionate for Jesus, wrote about Jesus and his love and his passion. So the Gospel of John stands apart from Matthew, Mark, Luke. John spends half of his book talking about the last 2 weeks in Jesus' life. Why that interests me right now is because the Lord has led me to search for the high values that God has. I shared with you last week that faith is a very big thing. You know, by grace we are saved through faith, that not of ourselves. It's a gift of God, lest any man should boast. Faith is a big deal. But an even bigger deal is when you've exercised your faith towards Jesus long enough, you've walked with him long enough, that you just trust him. I'm going to just tell you that in my experience, my own personal experience, there were those days when I wrestled with faith, I wrestled with God, I wrestled to know him and to be stronger in my faith. And today, I just trust him. There are many things I don't even pray about anymore. I just trust him. I spend probably more of my time just thanking him, and because he's so faithful. So faith is a big deal, but trust is even bigger. Last week in John 12, we talked about honor. Honor is a big deal. But when God comes to Jesus and says, because you've honored me, I will glorify you. Glorifying is even a bigger deal. So when N.T. Wright speaks about the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, he said, I want you to imagine a stereo. And what God is doing is adjusting the dials on the stereo, adjusting the mix. So Matthew portrays Jesus with genealogy and historical and biblical scriptural facts to believe that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah. Mark adjusts the volume and the treble a little bit, the mix, so that you hear something slightly different. Mark's gospel, probably more for the Greek, for the Gentile. And he talks about how immediately Jesus did things. There was such an immediacy to him. Jesus was intentional. So Mark's gospel, it just shows time and time again where immediately this happened or immediately that happened. And it shows a lot of miracles, a lot of demons being cast out. Luke, the physician who traveled with Paul, went back and researched and talked to firsthand eyewitnesses and got the whole story as best he could. And he told it for Theophilus, which the word Theophilus means lover of God. So we're not sure if that's a person or if it's just anyone who's a lover of God. So if you can imagine a stereo system or a sound system, we have Ryan back there faithfully adjusting everything so that we sound better than we are. And, you know, when something's not quite there, he tunes one thing a little bit. And when something is too much there, he turns it back a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So the four Gospels give us a good picture of Jesus' life. Can I just tell you this very quickly, is that the three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, we call them synoptic. They're same. They tell the same story in kind of the same pattern, in the same kind of way, with the same kind of beginning and same kind of ending. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John mention the communion around the Passover meal, make no mention of the foot washing that occurred at that meal. Why is that? It's just the way the Spirit led them. But John takes and he writes about the foot washing and makes no mention of the meal other than hinting at it by giving bread to Judas. Okay? I want you to hold that thought in your mind as we go through this and we start to break things down here a little bit for this day. There is something here that I really want to share desperately with you. And just so you know, we're not going to practice foot washing. You can be relieved right now, you know. In my experience, people would rather talk about fasting, and we really don't like that too much either, you know. Talk to me about fasting. Let's not talk about foot washing. So one of the questions that come to mind is, are we to practice it? Is it something that Jesus commanded? It seems to be, and yet we don't do it. Why don't we do it? Well, we do it sometimes, you know. So I want to try to help us with that. I don't know about you, but if you've... Well, let me just ask you, how many has ever been either a participant in foot washing or you're the one who instigated it? Just raise your hand, okay? All right, all right. Thank you. The rest of you have something yet to experience. Yeah. In my experience, whether you're the one initiating the foot washing or you're the one receiving it, in both cases, it's awkward. It's like it just doesn't get much more awkward than that. The only thing more awkward than that is Peter saying, well, then wash my head and my hands and, you know. I'll never forget a good friend of mine, musician, tremendous musician, and got powerfully saved by God and delivered. And every once in a while, he and I would do some things together. And this is when I'm a young married man. And I had an opportunity to bring him to the Church of God down the street here, which, praise God, the Church of God down the street has decided to reclaim the building, and they're using it for a training headquarters. And so they're in the process of remodeling that. It's good to see that happening. But a long time ago, it was a small congregation, and they would meet, and they're the Church of God that does foot washing. So I didn't know this, so my friend is there to play, and I'm his driver and his introduction. And so they said, we're going to have communion. So we had communion together, no problem. It's good to be in other churches at different times and experience things that make you feel uncomfortable, you're not comfortable with, because we learn from each other. We grow. It's all the body of Christ, you know, and there's so much we can gain. Not everybody has everything, right? You know. So their practice was, after communion, it's voluntary, but they had foot washing. So I'm like, I'm down for that. Let's go do that. So they do it where they had, the men went and washed the men's feet, which I would encourage that, and the women went and washed the women's feet. Although I'd prefer a woman wash my feet, but sometimes it gets wicked, you know. Let me tell you, you rub my wife's feet, she'll follow you anywhere. She'll follow you if you just rub her feet. All right. We have a very impossible relationship because I've got this thumb that is just so sore most of the time. And she wants her feet rubbed in. It's like, do it with my left hand, you know. Is it just me or is it hot in here? I don't know. Yeah. So men are sitting across from each other, and my friend, right away, being my friend. See, now this guy lived in the world a long time before he got saved, so he was wiser than I am, you know. He figured this out right away, and he sat where I would wash. I mean, he would wash my feet, okay? And I get to wash the guy who's 97 years old. I get to wash his feet with toenails that hadn't been cut in 30 years. This is my baptism by fire, you know? It's like, I've never done this before. We don't do this in my circle, and now I know why, you know? And this guy takes his shoes off, and I'm like, oh, my God. Can we just pray for your feet first, you know? Yeah. Put those socks back on. You know, that was my first experience with that. And you know, the funny thing was, is that I noticed that there was, you know, among these 8 or 10 guys, you know, some of them just talking about cutting the grass, you know, and guys washing his feet. Other guys, you know, were more intentional in their conversation. So, you know, that was my my first experience with foot washing. But there's been many since then. And I'm so thankful that John took the time to write down what happened here. Because there's something so powerful here and so lovely, but we shy away from it because of the awkwardness of the thing. So let me just do one thing right from the beginning. Let's just talk about the setting. Carrie, can you give me those slides, or maybe my screen is just not on. If she can get them, we'll get them up there. I have no control over it. Okay, this time. They're beautiful slides. You should see them. Any minute you should see them. There they go. All right. All right. First of all, our culture and customs and time have separated us so much from this. So for a Jewish person in first century Middle East, they don't wear shoes and socks. They don't have paved roads. They don't have sidewalks. They don't have pedicures. They have sandals and they have dusty streets. And so you can imagine if you've been camping and maybe at the shore and you go from the bathhouse to the beach or whatever, you know, sand and everything sticks to your feet. So it just became a necessary fact that you wash your feet, or otherwise the house is just always dirty. And because they weren't sitting on chairs, they were sitting on the floor with their feet sort of beside them, or maybe in front of them, cross-legged, you know. Sand gets into food. So for a meal, you wash your feet when you walk in the house. So like for Simon the leper, who invited Jesus to his house, in another gospel account, we read this, Mary Magdalene, who had just been delivered from demons, comes and weeps over him, his feet, Jesus' feet, as they're sitting, reclining, eating, and wipes them with her hair. And Simon the leper becomes furious and says, you know, like, if you're any kind of respectable man of God, you wouldn't let this unclean woman be touching you. And so they had conversation about clean and all of that, you know. So then Jesus kind of rebukes him for not offering the ordinary, customary practice of at least offering to wash your feet, or having a servant wash your feet. Or if they were a wealthy household, then it would be the lowest servant girl would wash the guest's feet, you know. Jesus said, you didn't even offer me water to wash my own feet, you know. So, you know, with that in mind, and with this story, like, it was for us, this is such an intimate and sacred and such a awkward moment for us, but for them it was very ordinary. This would be more like you and I going down to Duke's down here to and walk into the restaurant, and you see tables and you know there's seating and dining in, and so you expect a host or hostess to take you to a table, and then someone would come and wait on you. But if you just walk in the door and no one says anything to you, and you're standing around for a while and nobody says anything, so you just grab a table and you go sit down at the table, and no one comes to your table, and an employee walks past, and you grab their arm and pull them over and say, "Listen, we've been sitting here for a while. Can we order something?" And they look at you and say, "Go to the cook and place your order," you know? I mean, that would be a little bit closer to the embarrassment and the awkwardness that in Jesus' custom, it wouldn't be the washing the feet. It would be not offering. Does that make sense? So we're in completely different worlds on this whole thing, you know. So I want to talk about the setting for just a moment. Let's talk with that little bit of introduction. Let's talk about the setting. It's just before Passover. So this is... the scripture says just before Passover. You probably realize that Jesus couldn't actually eat Passover on Passover because he was being crucified, you know. So he met with his disciples probably on that Thursday and before the crucifixion. And so it's right before Passover, maybe Thursday, and they're having supper together, and it's hard to say from the manuscripts, but it seems like it's like in the middle of the meal. It's like, you know, there's a little bit of a pause here. They've eaten, and then they stop for a second. And it's before communion. That part hadn't yet come. That was going to come next. And they're sitting, forget Leonardo da Vinci's drawing. You know, they're not all on one side of a European table with chairs. It's just not how it was laid out. It would be more like a mat on the floor, maybe a low table, but they're sitting on mats and their feet are sort of extended. So if you've got some guys lined up around the perimeter of a rectangular table, by the way, let's just say that John is here with his feet extended that way. Jesus is here with his feet extended behind John. John just leans this way. So lean back was not really difficult for him to do, you know. It's pretty close at that table. And they had done this before. They had eaten together before on many different occasions. But in the middle of all of this, the unexpected happened. Just this is Jesus being Jesus. He just stands up and he takes off his outer garment. That's the thing that when Peter saw Jesus on the shore after his resurrection, and Peter's out on the water in the boat, and it says that he took his outer garment off and jumped in or whatever, you know. He wouldn't swim with a robe on. And Jesus kind of unclothes himself to sort of a working, kind of like in his underwear, kind of like that, you know. And so he takes his outer clothes off. He's still clothed, and he wraps a towel around himself, and he pours a bowl of water, and then he begins to lovingly walk up to the first person, whoever that was. I don't think it was Peter, first of all, you know. Maybe he washed John's feet first. We don't know. It doesn't tell us. He just starts to lovingly wash someone's feet. And then dry it with the towel. And by the way, when he's doing this, when we sit down on a chair and someone's at our feet and they're washing our feet, most of the time we're looking at the feet. See, that's what I should have done. I should not have looked at the guy's feet. I should have just looked at his eyes and washed his feet. I mean, that's how you get past those things. I know, some people can't even touch feet. I know that. I get it. Right. It's a little traumatized. Judy and I were discussing this. How long does this ordeal take? I'm saying that Jesus is looking in their eyes and he's knowing them. And I'm saying 3 to 5 minutes. She said, no, no, it's much less than that. So anywhere between 40 minutes. Well, so anywhere between totally 40 minutes and an hour. If we go to 5 minutes a person, 12 of them, hour. From 40 to 60 minutes, something like that. It's not happening in a quick fashion because I don't think that Jesus was weirded out. What I think was happening is he was in this room and he knows from what we studied last week that his hour is now come. So the clock is ticking. He knows that there are things that will happen. He knows them by the scriptures. He knows that someone will betray him. I don't think he knows who it is yet. Personally, I don't think he knows when he chose Judas from the very beginning. The disciples wrote that in their gospel accounts later, that from the beginning, this was the betrayer. But when Jesus chose Judas and had him come and follow him, I don't think he chose him because he needed a betrayer. How many of you understand that Jesus will reject someone who rejects them, but he actually chose them? I don't know if that's Calvinian or how that fits. I think that Jesus chose these 12 and he intended to love each one of them to the end, and he intended to take each one of them to the end. He intended to authorize every one of them, but one of them would become a betrayer. I think Jesus walks into this room and in the spirit he feels something is off, and the way he discerns it is by washing feet. So he starts washing someone's feet, and he's discerning where that guy is. Then he goes to the next one. He discerns where that guy is. That's why in verse number 11, he says he knew who it was who was going to betray, you know, who was not clean and would betray him. I think by that point, by washing Judas's feet, he knew who it was now. Okay, so there's one part of this whole thing that is about discerning where you and I are. How many of you think, with me, there might be less counseling needed if we were able to discern where each other are at in a safe place, in a safe setting? Do you notice Jesus wasn't washing the feet of the multitudes? This is his people. This is his people. So the setting is maybe up to an hour. Okay, what are the different reactions? Let's look at them very quickly. We don't have time to go into each one of them today. But Peter's reaction is, first of all, and I'm so thankful that Ryan read this time when, you know, Peter gets it really right. You know, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Yeah, he got it wrong next, and now he gets it wrong again, you know, as Peter questions Jesus. That's not very good. I mean, it's okay when you know someone and love them well. It's fair to have a question and to ask the question. It would be better to ask the question than to just walk around with questions all the time. But it was kind of misplaced. He asks a question, and then when Jesus answers him, then he protests, and Peter's just having a bad, it's an off day for him. But isn't it interesting that later on in the book of Acts, when Peter has been called to go to Cornelius's house, the word the Spirit gives him, whoever I have cleansed, you should no longer consider unclean. How about that? I think that word was a reoccurring word for Peter. It started right here. So Peter's reaction was not the best. But I'm thankful for it because we learn from it. because we have those same reactions. John's reaction was, Jesus, I just can't get close enough to you. Who can fault that? Judas is tormented by the love that was shown to him and the seed that was planted in his mind. I believe that Judas went from hopeful that this was Messiah to discouraged because Jesus was not doing what he thought he would do. And I think that he was vulnerable for an attack from the adversary. And believe it or not, in that mix, in that moment, in that space, I'm telling you, when you get kind of separated, when you start thinking on your own and you leave the group to go do something, you know, like ask, so what would you give me if I turned Jesus over? You know, when you start thinking those kinds of thoughts, it's when we need the rest of the group even more. Judas was tormented by love. All the disciples were clueless. They had no idea what was going on. But here's another one. It's interesting to me. This is the second time John mentions this. There'll be a third one mentioned by the other gospel writers. But John says that Jesus was troubled in spirit. I want you to think about this. For Jesus to be in his humanity, and I get it, he's bearing our weight, but he literally is experiencing in his spirit something that really feels wrong. And if you've ever experienced it by divorce or by firing or by... if you've been rejected, if you've been betrayed, Jesus is feeling... one of his closest is going to betray him. I'm a little bit hopeful because if Jesus couldn't get everybody on board, you know, it still saddens my heart every time someone walks out the door. Like the moment when Jesus hands him the bread and Judas walks out the door and it's like, you know, they're never coming back. They're never coming back to this, right? Jesus is troubled in his spirit. And in my opinion, he sensed the betrayal in the room and he discerned who it was in the foot washing. Let's talk about the cleansing for a moment. Jesus corrected the religious leaders about the ceremonial washing of hands. If you know your Old Testament history, you'll know that God gave to Israel through Moses a prescription for cleansing, for sin and for disobedience. So he gives them a law and a way to live. And then when you fail, you repent. There's sacrifices, and there are certain ceremonial washings. One of them is an amazing one where you take a pigeon and you wring its neck off. That's not so cool, but you know, you kill this thing and you take a scarlet thread and a piece of cedar wood and you bleed it out under running water. So the Jews are familiar with cleansing rituals. Even John the Baptist coming and baptizing people, many times when Gentiles would convert to Judaism, they would go through a ceremonial washing to show their cleansing from, you know, so they were circumcised, they were washed, and now admitted into the community. So the Jews are used to that. But by Jesus' day, ceremonial washing had turned into us in them, the people in the world, just staying away from the Gentiles. And you've been out in the marketplace around the filthy money and the filthy stuff and the filthy people. You come in and you wash your hands in such a way that you show to everybody you are a holy person and they are not. So you cleanse yourself in front of everybody so as to make a distinction between you and them. But somehow you got to work with them. So Jesus had corrected the scribes and the Pharisees and their misrepresentation of cleansing and washing. And then he had corrected Simon the leper. So these guys are pretty cured, like of needing to wash their hands and their feet and stuff, you know. I think that they're probably washing for hygienic reasons, not for ritual reasons. Okay, so in that context, now he's going to give them a brand new covenant. And the first covenant that God gave to Israel with all these washings and these ceremonies and things, the God who gave it to them, his name is I Am, which basically means everything you need, I Am. Everywhere you are, I Am. Everything but creation, I Am, you know. So it's kind of a funny name, but so when Jesus says to the disciples, you call me teacher and Lord, and so I am. I mean, this reverberates in the room. Jesus is saying to his disciples, the one who gave Moses the Ten Commandments is now here with you, and he's going to give you a new commandment. And this one is based on love, like that one was too, but you're going to find out love looks differently from God's perspective. So again, what's the high value? Well, for one thing, authentic relationship, being real, being authentic. Like, we don't need to play games. I know when I mentioned about when we were weaker in faith and when we're stronger in faith, sometimes you walk out of this place and everybody else's faith, you hear Brianna's testimony, it brings everybody's faith up and you walk out the door and you're left with your own. And sometimes you know, after a while, it's like so little and you don't feel victorious. How do we help each other? Well, for one thing, it's not by hiding. How many of you know that when we see each other and we say, how are you? And usually 99% of the time it's good. And probably 78% of the time we're not good. We didn't want to take the time to unwrap it and kind of go through it. Can you see why maybe foot washing would be a time when you could do some of this? Peter's first mistake that he makes is thinking that Jesus did not need to cleanse him. I don't believe that Jesus is talking right now about what he would do on the cross. Jesus had said, and he will say again, that they were clean because they had received his word. His word cleansed them. So he's saying to Peter, look, if I don't wash you, in other words, if you don't receive me, if you don't receive my word, we could add to it, if you don't receive the ones I send to you, if you don't receive them, then you don't receive me. And if you don't receive me, you don't receive the one who sent me. In that case, you have no portion with me. That's Jewish language. They all knew that the tribes of Israel had been given out lands. But the Levites, they had no land given to them because God was their part. God was their portion. Levites get nothing but God. So Peter is telling him, if you don't let me clean you, if you don't let me in, if you don't receive my word, there's no inheritance for you, Peter. Then Peter makes another mistake and he says, okay, then wash my hands and my feet, face. And Jesus uses this opportunity to say, the person who is bathed is already clean. It's just their feet that gets dirty. And that's, there's a two-edged meaning to this. And the first meaning is this, the first thing that is so important is that he's saying to them that once you've been cleansed and you walk in the world, you're bound to get a little dirty. Especially if you're hooked on social media. If you walk in the world, you're bound to get a little bit dirty. And you don't need another bath. You don't need to get saved again. You don't need to receive Jesus all over again. What you need to do is let us help you wash yourself. See, these things are things that we can't often see ourselves. Sometimes it takes a brother or sister to say, listen, it may not be my part at all, but I just discern that your spirit is troubled. I'm going to teach you three questions in a minute to ask that'll help us with this. Then the second thing that Jesus was saying by that, he says, but you when you're bathed, you're clean all over. And then he said, but so you are all clean now. So we washed your feet. You are all clean now. But then he turns that and said, but not all of you are clean. Because he knew that one of them would betray him.